Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, November 28th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday, we're so lucky to have her, is Dr. Laura Scordino of Ellis Medicine. She's here to answer your questions about hand, elbow, and shoulder injuries, and a lot of people have them. We're going to get a lot of calls on this program, so call now, 1-800-348-2551. You know that number, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Scordino, your calls and much more. They're all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lori London. Wisconsin election officials... lockdown on campus at Ohio State University in Columbus has been lifted following a violent morning. Authorities say at least 9 people were injured by a suspect who attacked victims with a car and a butcher knife. Ohio State Police Chief Craig Stone spoke in a news conference a short time ago, where officials still have more questions than answers.
The only thing that you can say, based upon common knowledge, that this was done on purpose, to go over the curb and strike pedestrians and then get out and start striking them with a knife. That was on purpose.
Police shot and killed the suspect. Hospital officials say none of the injuries is life-threatening. Wisconsin election officials plan to begin a recount on Thursday of the nearly 3 million votes cast for president earlier this month. From member station WUWM in Milwaukee, LaToya Dennis reports.
The recount must be wrapped up in time for the state to submit its final presidential election tally to the federal government by December 13th. Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein and an independent candidate requested the recount. Stein says the goal is to verify and ensure the integrity of election results. Mark Thompson is a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. He doesn't expect the outcome will change.
The margin, it may be not 22,177, but I don't doubt that the president-elect is going to win that vote.
Wisconsin election officials say there is very little chance the state's decentralized voting process could have been affected by hackers. For NPR News, I'm LaToya Dennis in Milwaukee.
Meanwhile, White House spokesman Josh Earnest tells reporters today in his daily briefing that there's been no evidence of widespread election fraud. His comments follow tweets over the weekend by President-elect Donald Trump, claiming he would have won the popular vote if not for millions of what he called illegal votes for Hillary Clinton and fraud in 3 states. In Syria, pro-government forces are making significant advances in the city of Aleppo. As NPR's Alice Fordham reports, they're taking back areas held by rebels since 2012.
Forces loyal to President Bashar al-Assad retook several key residential areas Sunday, according to Syrian state media and an opposition-leaning monitor. The eastern side of Aleppo has been held by rebels for years, but that opposition enclave is now almost cut in half by the pro-Assad troops. Thousands of civilians fled the fighting, some into areas held by Kurdish forces and others into government-controlled areas. The UN says about 200,000 people are in eastern Aleppo. The regime says they were forced to stay there by rebels, while some residents have told NPR they are afraid of the regime and don't want to leave their homes. Alice Fordham, NPR News, Beirut.
Stocks are trading lower following last week's record-setting rally, the Dow down 29 points. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Novo Nordisk, which is committed to a healthy economy, environment, and society as part of everything it does. Learn more about their commitment at novonordisk.us and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Support comes from the University at Albany Biomedical Sciences Department, offering graduate fellowships to train in the New York State Public Health Laboratory. Now accepting PhD and master's applications. UAlbany BMS for information. New York Oncology Hematology now offering stereotactic radiosurgery in Saratoga County. SRS treatment for inoperable tumors available at their Clifton Park office, NewYorkOncology.com. And from Current Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota, serving life insurance carriers and their distribution partners, offering DOL fiduciary rule compliance training. CurrentCompliance.com.
This is WAMC Regional News. I'm Jim Lavoulis. In the headlines, police have released the name of the man who was fatally shot inside an Albany bar early on Thanksgiving. Albany police say 26-year-old Wendell Hill of Troy was killed and three others were wounded when someone opened fire around 2 a.m. Thursday inside Rocks, a bar popular with the LGBT community. Police have said the shooting was not bias-related. A 17-year-old is in critical condition after being shot Friday in downtown Pittsfield. Police say they found the unidentified male shot in the torso while responding to a shots fired report near Methuselah Bar and Lounge on North Street around 11:30 Friday night. Uber and Lyft have agreed to comprehensive background checks on all of their Massachusetts drivers. Governor Charlie Baker's administration says the deal announced today calls for the most stringent background checks of the ride-hailing companies in any state. The screenings will begin in January and are slated for completion in early April. Donald Trump's election has thrown into question plans by U.S. cities to take in Syrian refugees, including one in Vermont. North Country Bureau Chief Pratt Bradley has more.
During the campaign, Donald Trump proposed a moratorium on accepting Syrian refugees for fear of terrorists slipping through. Once he takes office, he could cut off the flow or reduce the number the U.S. will accept. Rutland, Vermont is preparing to receive 100 mostly Syrian refugees beginning early next year. Mayor Christopher Loris says he isn't, quote, even going to hazard a guess, unquote, about the program's fate. He hopes an influx of immigrants will help revitalize the city. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
A Connecticut man who posted widely viewed online videos of flying drones shooting bullets and flames has lost a legal fight to overturn his expulsion from college. A Superior Court judge recently dismissed a lawsuit by Austin Howitt, who sued Central Connecticut State University officials for wrongful expulsion. His lawyer said today that an appeal is planned. In the forecast, mostly sunny today, highs in the lower 40s, increasing clouds tonight with a chance of rain by sunrise, possibly freezing rain in the Adirondacks, Champlain Valley, and central and northern Vermont, lows in the lower to mid 30s, cloudy with rain tomorrow, especially in the morning, highs near 50. At last report, cloudy and 35 in Morrisville, Vermont, sunny and 49 in Poughkeepsie, New York, sunny and 45 in Amherst, Mass., and 44 degrees and sunny in Litchfield, Connecticut. Stay tuned for more WAMC News at 3.
Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. The Brattleboro Retreat, providing hospital-based mental health services, including medically assisted alcohol withdrawal. BrattleboroRetreat.org for information. And from the Cheryl R. Lindenbaum Comprehensive Cancer Center at New York Presbyterian Hudson Valley Hospital. NewYorkPresbyterian.org/Hudson Valley to learn more. And from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, AshfieldStone.com.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss orthopedics is Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. She specializes in hand, shoulder, and upper extremity surgery. Dr. Scordino has a particular interest in the treatment of tendon, nerve, and arthritic conditions of the hand and wrist. She received her doctorate of medicine at Upstate Medical Center in Syracuse, that's Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, and completed her orthopedic surgery residency at the University of Connecticut. Dr. Scordino has experience caring for athletes at UConn and Syracuse University and was herself a Division I basketball player. Dr. Scordino, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Alan.
Well, it's great to have you here. So let's start with what you see. What is the number one complaint? Is it tennis elbow or what?
That's a good one. Tennis elbow is pretty common. That's probably one of the most common elbow complaints I see.
So what is it?
Tennis elbow?
Yes.
It's interesting. We used to think that it was more of just an inflammatory process,
yes.
But now we think it's probably more some degree of just kind of wear and tear, some degree of just a kind of part of living your life and kind of aging. You know, it's one of the most common complaints that someone has in their 30s, 40s, 50s in terms of elbow pain.
Can you do anything about it?
The good news is that probably about 90% of the time it goes away.
Goes away, yeah.
But the kind of bad thing is that it can take a while. It can take 6 months. It can take 9 months. There's the various braces that you can wear.
My bad.
Physical therapy is an option. Sometimes we do steroid injections. And then ultimately, if none of that helps, then we do surgery. But we try to hold that off for as long as possible because of the fact that usually it does go away.
Well, is that something we should all learn from, which is that we should give it a couple of weeks before we go to the surgeon?
I mean, I don't think that that's a bad way to look at it, unless, of course, you've had some kind of fall or, you know, some specific injury that definitely changes your function. Then you may want to get things checked out sooner and go to the emergency room or, you know, something of that nature. But if it's kind of an ache and pain that's been there for a bit, you may give it some time before looking into it more.
And shoulders are a tough deal also, aren't
Absolutely,
they?
Absolutely, yep. Yeah, I see a lot of people with shoulder problems.
So you get a lot of frozen shoulders, things like that?
Yep. Frozen shoulders, definitely a common one that you want to make sure that you aren't missing because x-rays often look normal.
Right.
But you can pick it up on the physical exam. That's really where you see that. And then, you know, we, again, usually start with a steroid injection and then do some therapy with that. And that's another one where usually your body takes care of it, but it often takes a long time.
Do steroid injections really work? I have the secret feeling that what happens is that you guys have to go through a certain checklist before you do surgery. So, that, you know, first come the steroid injections, you know, and that kind of thing, and then maybe the PT or whatever.
Right.
And then,
I mean, I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to not think of it as we have to check certain boxes, but I think it's a reasonable thing to consider, you know, trying therapy, trying injections, those things before jumping into surgery in most instances. Of course, if there's some, you know, certain times there, you just go right to surgery.
Right.
But, you know, in answer to your question, does steroid injections work? I think it kind of depends on what the problem is. But for the shoulder, steroid injections can be very helpful, particularly with something called bursitis or impingement, which is actually the number one reason that people come to see a doctor for shoulder pain.
What's impingement?
Impingement is, a description is, you know, as you're typically, as you're raising your arm up overhead,
yes.
The kind of theory is that the humeral head, you know, the shoulder as a whole, just kind of start out, is a ball and socket joint. And so the humeral head is the ball portion. And as you start to raise your arm up overhead, the idea is that that can get pinched on what's called the acromion, which is kind of your, you know, shoulder bone that you can feel out on the side. And so the idea is that as you're raising your arm up, that kind of pinches down and causes pain. And that's the idea of impingement or bursitis. They're kind of the same term.
As one who's been through steroid injections myself, I always have the feeling that the first one works, as we say, you know, real good.
Yep.
And then the second one, okay. And then the third one, not so much.
Sure.
Is that just anecdotal nonsense, or is that possible?
That, you know, there may be some truth to that. I mean, in general, when we're kind of taking care of more inflammation type things, I try to kind of have the goal in mind to not be doing a number of different steroid injections, because
right.
You do start to worry that it may hurt some of the soft tissue in the area. Whereas if you're doing steroid injections for joints, for arthritis, then you can do them a little bit more often, or kind of as a whole, you can do more of them. So you don't want to do them that frequently. Again, for arthritis, I would still only recommend 3 to 4 in a year. That's kind of the general recommendation. But for tendon type problems, I don't usually do more than 2 or so, because then you start to worry that, you know, there could be some soft tissue problems.
Now, hands, I've heard hands are the worst things for a surgeon to handle, because they're so complicated. They have so many different facets to them.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the anatomy of the hand is definitely complex, you know, with the various, you know, tendons and nerves that you have in a small area. And the hand has so many different functions that are kind of intricate. And so, you know, while a tendon you may think just does one thing, it often to some degree helps doing something else. So, I mean, it is, you know, a little bit involved, but you know, it's something that's we can take care of, you know, depending on what it is.
It's a challenge, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go to Joe in Albany. All right. And therefore, we'll go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay. Jim, you're on.
Is there any long-term increase in the incidence of tumors such as fibrosarcoma or osteogenic sarcoma at the fixation implant sites?
That's an interesting question. You know, I don't know that specifically. I have not heard of that being a common problem that we have to consider. You know, when you start thinking about long-term tumors developing, you know, oftentimes if you have a wound that's kind of constantly draining, that's when you may develop a tumor that you're not really expecting. So I think that's kind of what I think of the most when I think of an unexpected tumor that's developed at an area of either infection or a burn site or, you know, those type of things.
Have you ever found that? I mean, have you when you open somebody's hand up or their shoulder up and found a tumor that you didn't expect to see?
I have not in my practice experienced that, thankfully. You know, that's something that, you know, at some point I may encounter, or that some people have encountered. It's something that you try to not encounter as much as you can.
I'd rather not.
Yeah.
I don't blame you. Okay, thank you, Jim. We'll go to, how about, how about Bonnie in Sharon, Connecticut? All right, Bonnie, you're on.
Whoa. Hi, doctor?
Yes. Hi, Bonnie.
Hello, Alan. This is an inquiry as to what did I do to my elbow.
Okay.
About over a decade ago, maybe a decade and a half, I fell asleep on a sofa. My left arm was outstretched, and it was cantilevered out.
Okay.
Beyond the sofa. And it was like that while I was sleeping for I don't know how long.
Okay.
And when I finally woke up, I couldn't even close my arm. And ever since then, that elbow has not been right. What did I do to my elbow?
Good question. Are you having much numbness or tingling, or is it mainly just pain?
Oh, no, there's no numbness and tingling, but I have never been able to, if I'm, like, lean on my arm, like, rest on it, with, you know, like, from my shoulder down, if I lean on it, that elbow will not hold. It will cave.
Okay.
And it's just never functioned properly, and I always feel if I'm lifting my arm up and down, I can feel it in the elbow.
Okay.
It's not like screaming pain, but it's never been the same since, and that's my dominant arm.
Sure. You know, I don't have a great answer for you just on that description. Oftentimes when people fall asleep on their elbow and then they wake up from it and it just doesn't feel quite the same, there's some degree of nerve compression.
Nothing was on the elbow. It was cantilevered out over in straight air. So basically what's happening was the elbow was supporting the rest of my arm from my elbow to my hand out into, you know, unsupported air for, I don't know, hour, 2 hours?
Sure.
Thereabouts.
Yeah. I mean, that typically doesn't result in long-term problems that you've had over the course of decades, you know, but I mean, obviously you're dealing with that. I mean, what I would think of is if it's a more recent problem is that you may have some synovitis or some inflammation in the capsule around the shoulder. So, you know, typically you start with kind of anti-inflammatories with that and then maybe consider doing some therapy, those type of things.
Right.
Bonnie, I'm so sorry. We got to get
That's
a
okay.
break in here. Thank you very
That's
much.
That's all right. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Doctor.
Right. Good luck.
We'll take a little break and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Dance Flurry, announcing Family Dance this Sunday at 3 p.m. at First Congregational Church, Albany, featuring participatory dancing and singing with live fiddle music for young children and parents. DanceFlurry.org for information. Joseph's House and Shelter, providing services to the homeless since 1983, announcing annual Winter Walk for the Homeless this Saturday from 2 to 4. Joseph'sHouseTroy.org for information. Best Cleaners, 11 locations throughout the Capital Region, offering tailoring, bridal, household, and shoe cleaning, plus home delivery. LookYourBest.com. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the Capital Region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. And from TSL, Time and Space Limited, Hudson, New York, screening The Handmaiden, Portrait of a Garden, The Met Opera's The Magic Flute, and Stage Russia HD, Eugene Onegin, timeandspace.org.
We are back. Thank you very much. And we are here with a wonderful guest, Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. And we're getting questions over the email about frozen shoulders, and one from Stephen and one from Donna. And what is a frozen shoulder and what's the treatment is the one question, and the other, what causes a frozen shoulder and is there a way to prevent a recurrence?
Okay. So frozen shoulder, it's called... The other term for it is adhesive capsulitis. And so again, you know, I was saying that the shoulder joint is made up of a ball and socket. And then there's the capsule that surrounds that, like it surrounds any joint. And so what can happen is that capsule can become kind of inflamed and then become very stiff, almost like scar tissue. And so that whole area, the capsule around it, can get, like I said, inflamed and then kind of stuck in there. And that's what adhesive capsulitis is. And so, you know, the causes... Sometimes we don't know the cause. It's more frequent in people with diabetes. It's more frequent in women. But, you know, it can be caused after a fall. It can be caused after surgery. And other times it just shows up. So, you know, that's adhesive capsulitis. The treatment usually, oftentimes we do a steroid injection. And you can do different steroid injections to different areas of the shoulder. With adhesive capsulitis, you're doing the injection right into the shoulder joint itself. And, you know, the idea there is to try to take down some of the inflammation and to help with some of the pain so that the patient can go to therapy and really kind of work through it in therapy. But again, this is a kind of slow process with therapy, and it can take months. And, you know, if finally with therapy things just aren't improving, then sometimes we do need to do surgery. And that's called a lysis of adhesions, where you're basically just kind of going in there and cutting the kind of scarred in capsule that's gotten so tight it's not allowing a patient to move their shoulder.
When I had it, you guys sent me upstairs to Rupture Associates.
Yep.
in your building. Is it Everett? Is it
on Everett Road?
Everett Road, yes. And they did a wonderful job, but it did take a long time.
Yeah.
And it was, but boy, I'll tell you, they gave me exercises, and I haven't looked back since that time. Okay, let's go to Joe in Albany. All right, Joe in Albany, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about the fact that I've had serious pain in my left hand. I'm left-handed. I went to see a surgeon. He's got me, I'm wearing a compression glove and like a splint kind of thing on my left hand. But I do have to do a lot of data entry and stuff on my phone for work. And I'd ask him if it was like a carpal tunnel type thing, but he said no. And I was wondering from the doctor what my prognosis as far as, you know, how long should I go with the splint to see if the splint's going to help? And then if I got a cortisone shot, how long should that last? Last cortisone shot I got in the same spot basically helped for about 2 weeks and then did not.
That was a cortisone shot into your hand, did you say?
Yes. Okay. My left thumb right at the very base. I mean, when I went to see the surgeon, he, like, got my hand, and he kind of pressed right at the very base of my thumb, and, oh, my gosh, when this thing hurts, doctor, it would make you you jump out of your skin, it hurts so bad.
Okay. But you're not having much in the way of numbness and tingling?
No.
Okay. So carpal tunnel, we usually think of, you know, causing more numbness and tingling. And so, you know, I would agree based on the, you know, the description that it probably is not carpal tunnel based on the symptoms. You know, it sounds like you probably have some tendonitis if there's pain that you can just kind of press on at the base of the thumb. This is actually a problem that's pretty common with patients that have newborn babies that are lifting them frequently. It irritates the tendons that are right at the base of the thumb. And so the things that you can do are some of the things that you've already mentioned. You know, the brace, you want to make sure that there's two main types of braces. One does not include the thumb, and that's more for carpal tunnel. And then there's one that includes the thumb, and that's more for a tendonitis. It's called de Corvain's tendonitis. And so, you know, so oftentimes we start with a brace and anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen. If that doesn't work, then you try the steroid injection. If it really worked and took away all the pain, even if it was only for 2 weeks, the good news is that you know you're going after the right thing because you did the injection and it made things feel better. With that said, you know, if it's only working for 2 weeks, obviously that's not the final solution. So you could consider another injection because sometimes people just need a second injection and maybe that'll, you know, take care of it. But if it's still really bothering you and you've had two different injections, then you may be thinking about surgery.
Okay, Joe, thank you very much. All right, that's Joe. Now we're going to go to Tim, but not before I give the phone number 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now we're going to go to Tim in Rensselaerville. Okay. Tim, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello, doctors.
Hi, Tim.
I would like to ask Dr. Sardillo about my... I had an operation on my elbow in order to alleviate an impingement that was making my hand numb.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that it could take up to a year to get better.
Yeah.
It really hasn't gotten better. It's been about a year and a half now. Hand is still numb, and that elbow site of the operation is extremely sore.
Okay.
Just for filling that out, I have a numb opposite foot working its way up my calf, and somewhat concerned about Lyme's. I'll opt out to you. Thank you.
Okay. So which do you have certain fingers that are numb in your hand?
Yes, the little finger and the one next to it, and okay. It's crawling up my lower arm.
Okay. So, I mean, just to kind of put it out there, Lyme disease is kind of one of those tricky diagnoses, though. So, you know, if you're really worried about that, getting a blood test may make sense.
Have had Lyme's disease and, you know, just hoping I'm cured.
Gotcha. Okay. So, I mean, in regards to your elbow specifically, it sounds like you had cubital tunnel, which is a nerve compression at the elbow. It's very much like carpal tunnel, but it's at the elbow. And so the way that you're describing it as in the small finger and the ring finger is absolutely typical for cubital tunnel.
Okay.
You know, I think that saying giving it a year is very reasonable. That's what I often tell my patients as well. If you're still not seeing improvements after a year and a half, you know, some of it is how bad was the nerve injured going into the surgery, because sometimes if the nerve has really been compressed, there can be injury to the nerve that even when you take the pressure off of the nerve, it doesn't completely respond. That's one option.
Yes, ma'am.
And then the other option is, you know, maybe consider getting a follow-up nerve study, which is, you know, a way of telling is the nerve still being compressed. And then the question is, you know, do you need another a revision surgery? So we're trying to release the pressure on that nerve, or sometimes we have to move the nerve into a different position. I'll tell you that they've done a lot of studies on this because it's a common problem. And the revision surgeries, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. So you really don't want to rush into that. And then finally, you always have to consider, is it coming from something else? And so, you know, you want to make sure that it's not coming from your neck, which can be another spot that can press on a nerve and cause numbness down into the hand.
Okay. Very interesting. I was hesitant to do another surgery.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's
really worked.
I think that that's a good mindset to have. I would definitely do not try to rush into a second surgery for this type of problem. But those are kind of the things that I would consider, another EMG or making sure that it didn't come from the neck.
Tim, I got to let you go. I got to let you go, Tim.
Mentioned going, putting the nerve around the other side of my arm, if it was a much more involved process, I guess.
Yeah, that's another option, which is just called a transposition. It's a very similar surgery, but you do move the nerve up in front of the elbow.
What does the nerve look like?
You know, I guess you could say spaghetti, but a really thick spaghetti, you know. It's maybe like a, depending on where, what nerve you're talking about, a nerve in the finger is a lot smaller than the nerve at the elbow. But the nerve at the elbow is, you know, half a centimeter in size. It's, you know, fairly decent size.
So when you're training, you have to train to see, to identify nerves?
Right. And, you know, when you're working in the hands, I wear loop magnification, which means it's kind of like, you know, glasses, but it's like a magnifying glass, so it magnifies everything you're looking at.
Oh, great. Okay, got to let you go. Bye. And now let's see here. I have to look at who's been holding on the longest, and that clearly has been Rob in Troy. All right, Rob in Troy. And how do I do that? Oh, yeah, wait. Oh, yeah, there it is. Rob in Troy, you're on.
Yes, hi.
Hey.
I had surgery on my shoulder for an impingement a year ago. It was the type of surgery where the doctor takes off about a quarter of an inch off of the end of the acromion process.
Yep.
And it took care of the impingement, and I have plenty of range of motion and strength now that I got back through physical therapy. But the site right on the acromion process and in my shoulder is still very painful. And I was wondering if that's normal.
You said it was how long ago?
A year.
A year ago. I mean, typically at a year, that site specifically shouldn't necessarily be that painful for you.
It's actually, I'd rather be back to the way I was before.
Okay. I mean, you can have different things, something called an os chromonale, which is kind of a way that the bone fuses in your acromion, and sometimes that is not completely fused, and so sometimes after you decompress that area, things become more unstable and then it hurts in that area. It's not that common, but that's kind of, you know, one of the things that I think of. Sometimes people just have some continued inflammation, and a steroid injection can kind of help settle things down after surgery.
I had a steroid injection 2 weeks ago and it did nothing.
Didn't help. Okay. So, I mean, that'd probably be the thing that I would think of. I'm sure that your doctor has probably thought of that same thing. But, you know, not seeing any of your images or x-rays or those type of things, that's kind of what I think of.
Yeah, the doctor did an MRI a month, 6 weeks ago, somewhere in there, and said that everything looked fine on the MRI.
Yeah, and that was a good idea to get that, because sometimes you can, you know, initially not have a tear of the rotator cuff or anything, but then with time develop that. So, I mean, I think that they're doing a good job looking into that.
But he found a very small tear in the rotator cuff, but he said that it was too small to really bother with.
Yeah, and generally that shouldn't cause point tenderness in that portion of your bone. Yeah.
Okay, got to let you go. Thank you very much, Rob. Okay, and now we're going to go to Bill in Rosendale. All right, Bill in Rosendale, you're on.
Hello, how are you both?
Hey.
I'm a musician, and I play banjo and guitar, and my left arm is pointing up, my right arm down normally. And sometimes, especially after I eat, I'm in the middle of playing, and my left forearm freezes up. And it's kind of a no-brainer about why, because I guess the food's rushing to my stomach, I mean the blood. And so I'm wondering, short of not eating in between shows, whether there's some exercise I can do to get the blood sticking around in my left arm.
That's an interesting problem. You know, I mean, I guess you can always do like stretching and things like that beforehand. Mm-hmm. I imagine that though, if you're playing, your hand should be, and your hand should be moving, your blood should be going. Do you ever have this cramping in your arm when you're, you know, at other times where you haven't just eaten
No,
and you're
never.
Playing the guitar?
And what happens is if I just drop my arm for 30 seconds, seconds if I can, then bring it up again, it goes away.
Okay. I mean, does it ever wake you up at night?
No, never.
No.
It only happens when I'm playing.
Okay. I mean,
and actually, it happened a couple times even when I was in my 20s.
Okay. I mean, some of it, you may consider looking into carpal tunnel a little bit, because carpal tunnel, even though normally it comes on with numbness and tingling, it can present in very strange ways. And sometimes it can cause more of a cramping and an aching type feeling. So I'm not sure the position that your hand is in when you're playing guitar, but it's possible that when your hand is really kind of, if your wrist is really bent up in a certain way, then that is pressing on the nerve.
Yeah, the higher my arm goes, the more it's likely to happen.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of what I think, is that it may be this kind of, you know, more of like an atypical presentation is what I call it, when people are describing more of a cramping type feeling. But it sounds very positional. It may not even be related to the eating, but more of the position that...
No, it is related to eating.
Okay.
I'm sure of it. You know,
'cause how do you eat?
Can oxygen deprivation also cause pain?
I would assume yes. I don't have a great answer to that, but I don't know that, you know, that you'd necessarily have the oxygen deprivation playing the guitar that would result in that.
Okay. Huh. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, bye. And now we're going to go to, pick them out, Lindsay in Rensselaer. Okay, Lindsay in Rensselaer, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay.
I'm an osteoarthritis person of the knees, but I've had it for a long time and been evaluated. Yes, you should have surgery, but I wasn't having a lot of particular pain. But I've had the shots and I've been on meloxicam, and then I've been doing real well. But I had a fall when I was on a vacation about 2 months ago, not even 2 months, and I fell on the one knee. And no kneecap, I was out of the country, no kneecap, it wasn't broken. But ever since then, that knee, and it seems like everything has gone into full gear pain of the knees, ankles, and hips.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, my question is, finding a doctor who will they evaluate, you know, everybody looks at my knees, but will everything be evaluated? How can I ask for that?
That's a good question. I mean, it sounds like you probably have some arthritis of that knee that was flared up when he fell, and that's not a common.
No, the fall was an accident type fall, not from the knee buckling.
Oh,
is
sure.
Is that what you mean?
But I guess what I'm saying is, if it may not have been hurting you before, and then after you fell, it flared things up. So that's a pretty common thing. But as far you know, somebody evaluating everything, I guess that would depend on each doctor that you see. Many times.
That's what I mean. Can you just go to an orthopedic doctor and say, do a body scan or something and see where the worst parts are?
Sure. I mean, that's a good question. A lot of people say, oh, I wish I could just have an MRI of my whole body. But unfortunately, that doesn't really exist. So generally, if you're taking care of the knee, you should be thinking about the ankle and the hip. We usually say, you know, you have to think about the joint above and below. And so, you know, if it's your knee that's really bothering you, then, you know, whoever's evaluating you should be looking at your ankle and your hip to make sure that it's not necessarily, you know, contributing to the knee or making it a lot worse. And if you had specific questions about one or the other, then, you know, they may be able to evaluate those type of things more thoroughly while you're there.
Okay. I was I was in my mind convinced to have the surgery about a year and a half ago for my knees.
Yeah.
And I went to one of those programs at Mercy where you talk to the surgeon about joint replacement. And,
yeah.
And I actually got talked out of it because he said it's very, you know, you could end up he was a bad ad.
Okay.
You could end up worse, or, you know, you can't guarantee that there won't be any pain.
Sure.
Well, I understood that, but at that point I wasn't having a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So
it's not a good idea to rush into it, but once the pain starts bothering you on a daily basis,
then it's at that point now.
Something to consider for sure.
Okay, Lindsay, I'm so sorry.
All right, what doctors are you with?
I'm with Ortho New York, so there's plenty of good joint surgeons with us. Yep.
Yeah. Thank you very
much. Okay, so if I made an appointment, would I ask for a knee guy or just somebody to look at me?
I would say probably a knee guy. That'd be a good spot to start if you had known arthritis in that spot.
Thanks,
okay.
Lindsay.
I know everybody is so you're so
specific
about ankles and necks and all that.
Yeah, most people who take care of knees take care of hips too. So knees and hips usually go together.
Gotta go. Thank you. All right. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, and Thai entrees. Daily specials, delivery expanding to Gilderland, 518-432-0358. The Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice. Physicians offering primary and specialty healthcare in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. HealthQuest.org for locations. The Turkish Towel Company offering American-designed Turkish cotton bath towels, makeup, washcloths, robes, and slippers direct from the manufacturer. TurkishTowelCompany.com. The Arts at Hotchkiss, Lakeville, Connecticut, presenting the Hotchkiss Orchestra and Right Brain Logic Jazz Ensemble, December 2nd at 7, hotchkiss.org/arts. And from 10,000 Villages, located in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, Main Street, Northampton, and Lee Premium Outlets, offering fairly traded holiday gifts and jewelry from around the world, 10,000villages.com.
Here we are with Dr. Laura Scordino, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Boy, we got a lot of people on the line. Laura, let me tell you my problems, even though you're not a psychiatrist. What happens is we want to get to everybody, you know, so I try to give everybody a fair amount of time. Then people call me up, I wasn't through yet, that kind of thing. So we have to sort of decide when to move ahead. You get that, of course. And we'll go to John in Red Hook. Okay, John in Red Hook, you're on.
Yes, I've had an EMG. I have carpal tunnel, apparently, in both hands. Both hands are numb. The left is worse than the right, and supposedly a neck impingement. But how often does it happen that you get numbness in both hands? I mean, that would I did lift a heavy jack and carry it across the floor. Would that cause all this? And does heavy lifting cause carpal tunnel?
So it's not uncommon at all to have carpal tunnel in both sides. It's not uncommon that I'll do a carpal tunnel release on one hand and we'll try to figure out, you know, when are we going to set up surgery for the next side. So it's not that uncommon. It's a good idea, though, to make sure that it's not coming from the neck and that that's causing symptoms on both sides. So I'm not sure exactly, what you mean by the neck impingement. There's varying degrees of impingement on an MRI that would tell you how much it's involved from the neck itself. But generally, an EMG is a pretty good way of telling you that you have compression at the wrist, which is carpal tunnel. And to be honest, there's, you know, we call it a double crush phenomenon, which means that the nerve, it comes out of your spinal cord, it can get pinched in the neck, and then it comes down your arm, and then it can get pinched at the carpal tunnel. So sometimes people have it where it's pinched at both the neck and the wrist. The most common, though, is to, you know, especially if you have an EMG that says that it's carpal tunnel, that it is, in fact, carpal tunnel getting compressed at the wrist. And if you needed to have surgery, most people would rather have carpal tunnel surgery on their wrist than to have surgery on their neck.
Absolutely. Tell me this. How long can I go before I have to start worrying about permanent nerve damage since I'm on 800 gabapentin every day?
That's a really good question. You know, a lot of that is dependent on symptoms. And, you know, does the numbness and tingling come and go, or is it constant? And then
no,
the
it's
other...
Constant.
I'm sorry?
Constant and very painful.
It's constant and very painful. So it sounds like you're probably moving towards surgery. And then the other is the results of the EMG. So the EMG can be mild, moderate, or severe. Generally, if it's in the severe range, then that's where I'm really recommending surgery very strongly. When it's in the moderate range, then we're talking a lot more seriously about surgery. But, you know, you don't have to, you know, absolutely rush to it. And then when it's mild, then it's very much a discussion of how bad are your symptoms and then trying to decide when to move forward based on that. That's just kind of a general overview.
Oh, that's very helpful.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you. All right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Joan in California. Are you really in California, Joan?
Yes, I really am in California. I listen to you from Suffield, Connecticut, ordinarily. But
wonderful.
I'm here because I, yes. and I managed to find your live broadcast, and so I'm enjoying listening to WAMC while I'm here. I'm here because I broke my upper arm quite near the shoulder. And the surgeon that I saw in Connecticut said that I would need surgery. there were people here who could help take care of me. So then when I saw it, but he wanted me to have the surgery here rather than have it there and then change venues. So when I got here, I saw two surgeons, and both of them strongly recommended against surgery. They felt that the humerus had been pushed up into the ball of the upper end of the humerus and that it was stable. And they cited some evidence that the results were equally satisfactory as far as range of motion and recovery, whether that is treated surgically or non-surgically. I am hoping that I didn't make a mistake in going with the non-surgical route.
Hi, Joan. It's Dr. Scordino. So, you know, that's a really interesting question, and it's sometimes really difficult to make that call, whether surgery is the best option or not surgery. And it very much depends on the x-rays, you know, and seeing where the fracture is. And the other discussion is, you know, how much, you know, what activities do you like to do? Is it your dominant arm or not?
Well, cross-country ski, swim, garden. But the other feature of this is I'm 75 years old, and
sure.
I'm hoping that I didn't get an
right.
inferior treatment because of my age.
Right. I mean,
so those are the things that I do.
Sure. So proximal humerus fractures, which is what this sounds like it was, they affect
yes.
overhead activity. And so that's the big concern. What I usually tell people is with or without surgery, you know, the pain's going to go away most likely. And it's really kind of a matter of how much overhead we can get you back. And that's, you know, what we don't really know how that's going to go. So, you know, I guess in short, part of it really depends on your fracture pattern. And so sometimes if it's a really bad fracture with multiple pieces in bad positions, then we can, in your, you know, with somebody who's 75, we may consider something called a reverse shoulder replacement, where you actually replace parts of the shoulder because of the fact that the bones are kind of more brittle and they may not heal. The other option is plate and screws to try to fix things, depending on if
That's
it's a kind of more simple fracture.
The plate and screws, because
okay.
it seemed to be all in one piece, and
sure.
it was in place.
And so, I mean, it sounds like you went the right route in not having surgery if the humeral head looked to be impacted or kind of lined up nicely to the humerus. And you know, proximal humerus fractures are very common. It's one of the most common fractures that we see in the office. And the majority of those you try to treat non-operatively. But, you know, if things really aren't lined up well, or, you know, depending on, you know, the x-rays and everything, then that's what would determine, along with your function and how much overhead lifting that you're doing, you know, whether surgery or not surgery is the right answer.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, we heard from Trish, who says, Dr. Scordino, broke my wrist in July. I was fortunate enough to be treated by Dr. Scordino. I have nothing but wonderful things to say about her. She's great.
Thank you.
There you go. All right. Now we're going to look on the great machine here and see who's been hanging on for the longest time. And that would appear to be number 8. No, number 7. No, that's wrong.
Six,
number 6.
Gonna...
Okay, we'll go to Diana in Woodstock. All right, Diana, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I have a mild case of Dupuytren's contracture. Mm-hmm. On affecting my ring and pinky finger. I'm scheduled to have an injection actually tomorrow, and I'm wondering what my prognosis will be. Will that straighten my fingers and eliminate me having to have surgery?
Sure, that's a good question. So Dupuytren's contracture is some scar tissue that has built up in your hand, and it's most common in people with European descent. It's not
yes.
uncommon to have it bilateral on both hands, and so oftentimes it's not that painful for people, but they notice that they have kind of a cord in their hand, and their hands won't straighten out all the way. So the treatment options, like you said, there's something called XiaFlex, which is the injection
yes.
that you're probably talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of new. That's probably over the last 5 to 10 years that has been developed. And then the other option is surgery. And so, you know, the best things in terms of your prognosis is the fact that you said that it's a mild case. And so
yes.
Surgery or the injection have a better prognosis if it is more mild. So it's kind of this interesting thing where, you know, if somebody comes in and they don't have much of a contracture at all, then you're not going to jump into doing surgery or an injection. But you also don't want to just say, leave it be, and then have someone come in and have their hand total, you know, stuck down into their palm.
Right.
Because yeah. neither of those treatment options will have a good result. So I think the fact
yeah,
that
I've,
you have...
I've had it for about a year, and I already saw a doctor, and he said, you'll know when it's time to do the injection. Yep. So I'm ready for the injection.
Yeah, generally it can be quite beneficial. And, you know, there's a less recovery and those type of things, you know, than
surgery.
So do you
think a one-time injection, will that do it for me?
How old are you?
I'm in my 60s.
In your 60s? Okay. I mean, the recurrence rate is higher the younger that you are. So, I mean, who really knows? But I think that that I think that with mild Dupuytren's and you're 66, then I think that the injection may very well take care of it. But, you know, depending on how advanced it is, again, it may come back. The surgery is a little bit more of a definitive treatment option, but it is more mm-hmm. of a recovery process.
Right.
Thank you, Diana. All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Ann in Saratoga. All right, Ann in Saratoga, you're on.
Yeah, that's me, and I'm calling about the carpal tunnel. I actually had surgery for carpal tunnel probably about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and it didn't help at all. I didn't know if there's anything else that could be done. I still have the fingers that are numb, no feeling in them, all
okay.
five of them.
Hi, Ann.
And is there anything else that can be done if the surgery doesn't work?
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, I think it's a little bit too early to throw in the towel and say that it didn't work at 5 weeks out from surgery. Usually with nerve problems, you kind of say that it may take up to a year, which is quite a while. But, you know, at least give it really a good, you know, multiple months, maybe even 6 months, 9 months, that time frame. But I think 5 weeks, it may still get better. So let's say in a year you're still having numbness and tingling, it just absolutely hasn't gotten better. Then, you know, I think we were talking about this earlier with a different caller. You know, the things that you think about are, is it coming from something else? Is it coming from the neck? Or you repeat the EMG and see, you know, sometimes you can do the surgery and not release absolutely everything. And so then it doesn't get better. But the more likely scenario is that it will, in fact, get better, but it's just that the nerve hasn't recovered yet.
I see. So it takes a while for the nerve itself to recover.
Correct.
Oh, okay, Ann, thank you. All right, let's go to Lynn in Palmer. All right, Lynn in Palmer, you're on the air.
All right. Hi, how are you today?
All right, go ahead.
I was just looking at my report that I had. Well, it's quite old, but I'm trying to read it. And it says I have mild to moderate ulnar neuropathy across elbow.
Yep.
But it was never explained to me what that means.
Okay. So ulnar neuropathy across the elbow is the same term as cubital tunnel. And so similar, like I said, similar to carpal tunnel, cubital tunnel is a different nerve, the ulnar nerve, and it's being compressed at the elbow. And so the nerve comes out of your neck and comes down your arm, goes behind the elbow, and there's varying soft tissue structures that can press on the nerve. And so if the nerve is getting pressed on, particularly usually when people bend their elbows, then it causes numbness, and that numbness often goes down into the small and ring finger. So in general with the EMGs, there's mild, moderate, and severe. And so if you're on the mild to moderate spectrum, then you know, a lot of it is dependent on your symptoms and how much it's bothering you. And if it's bothering you quite a bit, then I don't think that it's unreasonable to consider doing surgery to try to release the pressure on the nerve. Alternatively, you know, you can try before doing surgery, you know, they have different braces that you can use for your elbow. And, you know, the big thing with cubital tunnel is usually your elbow being bent too much because that puts additional pressure on the nerve.
Right. Because I was just a little confused because when I had the EMG, and he had put the needle in the middle of my arm, you know, to see how far the nerve fluctuates.
Yeah.
It didn't move at all, to the point where he zapped it again, and it didn't move again.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, that was like towards the brachial, wherever that part of the arm is.
Uh-huh.
And
I guess I wouldn't worry specifically about what was happening during the EMG itself, because, you know, who really knows exactly where the needle was when they were doing different parts of it. I think the take-home message is probably, you know, the results that they said, mild to moderate cubital tunnel.
Great.
Okay, Lynn, thank you. All right, 1-800-348-2551. We're really running out of time now. So now we're going to go to Mercedes in Woodstock. Mercedes, is this the first call you made today? Yes, here.
Hello?
Hello. This is your first call today,
Hi.
Right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'll be brief. I'm curious about a swelling between the knuckles, you know, the higher part of the knuckles, between the fingers. It's a consistent puffiness, swelling, and occasional soreness on the knuckle itself. It's on the higher part of the knuckle that's closer to the wrist.
Is it on all of your knuckles or just one?
No, all of them, in between.
Okay. So, I mean, generally when you start hearing that there's swelling within all of the knuckles, then you want to make sure that there's not some inflammatory process that's going on throughout your body and not one specific joint itself. So, you know, so you could start with taking some anti-inflammatories on a regular basis if you're, you know, medically are able to take those things and see if that helps. And then the other thing is, you know, to consider getting some blood work to look for inflammation markers, rheumatoid arthritis, those type of things.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you. All right. I think we could probably squeeze one more in, but it's going to have to really be quite fast. We'll go to Austin in Schenectady. Austin in Schenectady, you're on. Austin, you only got a second or two, so go ahead.
All right. Hi, Alan. Thanks for getting to me quickly. It's a caller who plays guitar. I've been playing for about 30 years. Very early on, I ran across information about avoiding carpal tunnel. I have some advice. Position, it's all ergonomics. If I am standing up, if I'm standing upright, so and the guitar's on a strap, that means it's free to go wherever I need it to be. Okay, I'm right-handed. The top end of the guitar, the top of the neck, when my left hand is up the top of that neck, it is at my shoulder height, precisely at my shoulder height, and to the left of me. My right hand is about halfway between my navel and my crotch.
Listen, this is very good of you, but as I said, it had to be short, and it couldn't have been. We couldn't have handled this. Thanks for doing that. Appreciate it. We are out of time. Thanks to Dan and Jesse and Jim and Art and Andrea and Daniel, who won't make it this time. I want to thank Dr. Laura Scordino of Ellis Medicine for being with us. Support for Medical Monday comes from Nathan Littower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, now offering inpatient dialysis, NLH.org. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Stay tuned now for a news update.